Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Chof Hei. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We notice at the top of Daf Chof Hei, we have a Mishnah. Nitmo HaKoimetz VeHikrivoi. If the handful of a meal offering became Tomei, and he then placed it on the fire of the Mizbeach, Hatzitz Meratzeh, the tzitz, the golden headplate of the Kohen Gadol, enables this mincha to be acceptable. Yotza VeHikrivoi, let's say the handful left the Azora of the Beis HaMikdash, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and then was brought back in and placed on the fire, Ein Hatzitz Meratzeh. The tzitz does not enable this mincha to be acceptable. Shatzitz meratze al hatome v'eino meratze al hayoytze. The tzitz's effectiveness concerns problems of tuma, of ritual impurity, but not problems involving departure from expected location. In this case, the azora of the Beis HaMikdash. The topic heading that we've assigned to this Gemara, as you can see in the outside margin, we have a Nosei/Mivneh heading. Nosei is a topic, Mivneh is a structural note. In this case, we combine the topic heading and structural note in one comment. Structural note is our attempt to explain what the role of the markings are as each new section arises. We have written on the side, Alma Hatzitz Meratzeh. The issue of this Gemara concerns what does the tzitz solve? What problems, as far as sacrifices are concerned, are solved by the golden headplate of the Kohen Gadol? Maskonas HaBraisa, we will see a maskona of a final point mentioned in a Tanaic source that the Gemara will quote, is Da'al Avoin Tuma Shehutra Michlola B'tzibur. The tzitz's effectiveness is limited to Tuma problems. And if you'll ask why does the tzitz alleviate problems of Tuma or circumvent or solve problems of Tuma, the reason for that is that Tuma, ritual impurity, has a lenient element associated with it, and that is that in the event that there is Tuma with regard to the public, whether it be a public sacrifice or the public themselves are Tamei, then even though on a private level, tuma is a reason for non-processing of a korban, if the public is tamei, the korban brought by the public nevertheless can be offered. So since there is an area of leniency with regard to tuma, and that's when it comes to the public, and when it comes to the public, one doesn't have to rely on the tzitz to solve the problem. But when it comes to the public, the Torah says that tuma poses no problem. So you have we'll call it a Torah license for tuma when it comes to the public. As a result of that, when it comes to private matters, a tuma is solved, or as we say, is circumvented by the fact that the tzitz is there. So that's true with regard to tuma. With regard to other problems, we don't find an area of leniency. This, of course, will give rise to a series of questions that are represented by a house form. The word maskif is enclosed in that, and a little later you'll see the word omar. These are questions, kushios, we've written on the side, kushios, lama loy lahoisif oidvorim shatzitziratze. Why not add a few more things that tzitzits should be able to solve? And they include problems of yotze, of departure from azora, smoil, the use of the left hand, and balmum, blemishes. In each one of these areas, the Gemara will suggest, and you'll see a double underline with dots in it, amaw, which are suggestions as to other areas that the tzitz should be able to solve. And the reason these suggestions will arise is because in each one of these, yotze, smoil, and balmum, we find areas of leniency concerning them as well. So just like you're explaining that the tzitz is meratze concerning tumah, because tumah is an area that we found leniency, that was true with regard to public sacrifices, with regard to these other areas, yotze, smol, and balmum, we find points or areas in which we are lenient with regard to them as well. Let's now turn to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. The Gemara introduces a Tanaic source, a Brisa, and this, you can see, is noted in a frame in our marking system. We attempt to distinguish between Tanaic literature and the Gemara text through framing off those sections that are of Tanaic origin. So the source begins, V'noso Aroin es Avoin HaKodoshim. The Pasuk says that Aaron will bear the sin of sacrifices. In other words, he will atone for that. V'chi eza avon hu nose, which sin is being atoned for that is referred to in this pasuk? Im toma avon pigol, if one is to think that a korban that was processed with incorrect thoughts, for example, pigol is a situation where during one of the key stages of sacrificial processing, the Kohen has a thought to sprinkle the blood the next day or to eat the meat beyond its time limit. Such a korban, being that it's processed with this incorrect thought, is ruined. So if one is to think that the tzitz can solve the problem of pigol, the pasuk says, Hare Kvar Nemar, it says with regard to pigol, lo yechoshev, that it will not be considered. In other words, it will be rejected. Im toimar avon pigol, and if you want to suggest, let's read that again, im toimar avon nosar, if one is to think that the sin of meat left over beyond its time is atoned for by the tzitz, hare kvar nemar lo yerotzeh. There's a pasuk regarding nosar, which says it's that such a sin is not forgiven. It's not acceptable. Ho enoi noise elo avoin tumo. The tzitz can bear or can atone for the sin of ritual impurity alone. Shehutro michlolo betzibur. The reason for the leniency with regard to tumo is because we find when it comes to public sacrifices, they are allowed to be processed in a state of ritual impurity, in a state of tumah. So since there is a precedent for leniency with regard to tumah, other areas that tumah affects will be alleviated by the tzitz. Maskif lo Rabbi Zera, emo avon yotze. Rabbi Zera challenges the teaching and says, why do you say only tumah is solved by the tzitz? Why cannot we suggest the avon yotze? Namely, if, let us say, the korban left the azara and then was brought back in, that such a korban will be acceptable. Shehutar michlolo bebama. We find in the case of private altars, in Jewish history, there were certain points that private altars were allowed. For example, the time period after the destruction of the Mishkan of Shiloh, before the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim, there was a period at which the Bomas Tzibur was located in Noiv and Givoin. During that time, people were allowed to have private altars, being that they were private altars, so by definition, there was no boundary with regard to the korbanos that people were processing in their homes. So you see that yotze, the idea of a defined boundary, is compromised, if you will, or there is leniency with regard to that restriction when it comes to bamas. So we have sacrificial precedent for leniency with regard to yotzei. So why not when it comes to the Beis Hamikdash? If the korban left the azara and was brought back in, the sprinkling of the blood of such a sacrifice or the offering of the handful for such a meal offering would be successful through the atonement of the tzitz. Omar le Abaye, Omar Kro, Abaye responds to Rabbi Zeira and says, the Pasuk says, L'rotzoin lohem lifnei Hashem. That's the Pasuk that we opened up this discussion with. Avon de lifnei Hashem in, the tzitz will atone for sins that are lifnei Hashem, meaning in the Beis HaMikdash. Avon de yotze lo, the sin of departure, that's not lifnei, it's not within, it's not in front of. It's gone beyond its boundaries. That, the Pasuk indicates, cannot be covered by the tzitz. Maskif lo, Rabbi Eloya. Emo avon smoil. Why not say that if a sacrifice was processed by the left hand, that it can be alleviated or solved or atoned for through the tzitz? Shehuter michloloi biyom hakipurim. The problem of smoil, we see an area of leniency with regard to Yom Kippur. During the Yom Kippur Beis Hamikdash service, the left hand was used for carrying into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the Ktores. So we see a precedent for the left hand being used. So in the case of general korban procedure, even though the right hand is that limb which is supposed to be used, if the korban is processed with the left hand, let it be atoned for or acceptable through the power of the tzitz. Just like we said, in the case of Tumah, there was precedent. And notice with our markings, we have a dashed underline under the expression Shehuter Michlolo. We saw that in the original source, and in each one of these suggestions, we're showing how they, too, are areas that there is an allowance made. Omar Le Abaye. Abaye responds to this Rav Ilaw suggestion. He says, Omar Kro Avon, the Pasuk that we cited at the opening of the sugya of Venos Aaron as Avon HaKadoshim, the Pasuk makes reference to the power of the tzitz to atone for that which is a sin. Avon Shehoyabo Udechisiv, the kapora, the atonement, is for a sin that had been there, that had been present, and is cast away, is pushed away. Lafuke Yom HaKippurim, to the exclusion of the example of Yom Kippur, Tehecheru B'smolhu. The smol, the left hand in the Yom Kippur ceremony or procedure, is not of a sin nature to begin with. It's the right way to do things. It's that which is expected. So the precedent of smoil by Yom Kippur does not match that which, or doesn't conform to that which the tzitz is designed to atone for. Once again, the tzitz is designed to atone for something that is of a, we'll call a sinful origin. The case of smoil by Yom Kippur is not of a sinful origin to begin with. We see above Abaye's name, we had a number one. This was Abaye's response to the issue of smoil. Rav Ashi represents a second response to why the tzitz won't meratze for smoil. Rav Ashi Omar Avoin HaKodoshim. The tzitz is effective for problems that are in the sacrifice. Below, Avon HaMakdishim. Makdishim is a reference to the people processing the sacrifice. In this case, the Kohen. He's called, in this sugya, the Makdish, the person. The Pasuk says that the tzitz atones for problems that are inherent in the sacrifice. Like tumah, something inherent in the sacrifice. In the case of smoil is a problem not inherent in the sacrifice, but a problem that's associated with the one processing the makdish, the one processing the korban. Therefore, the tzitz does not cover that, as after all, the Pasuk said, Avon HaKodoshim, and we infer not Avon HaMakdishim. Amar le Rav Sima Brei de Rav Idi, the Rav Ashi. The Amri Law, another version is Rav Sima Brei de Rav Ashi, the Rav Ashi. We have dashed, underlined the point of difference between these two versions of who the speaker is. It's either Rav Sima, the son of Rav Idi, or Rav Sima, the son of Rav Ashi. In either case, Rav Sima is addressing Rav Ashi with a question. And that's why we have a little house marking around Omar. This is a question. The Emo Avon Balmum. Why not say that the tzitz comes to atone for a korban that is blemished? Shehuter michloloi ba'oifos. We find leniency with regard to blemishes when it comes to bird offerings. Yomar mar, tamus v'zachrus bebehema. Tamus means non-blemished. Zachrus has to do with zohor or gender. Gender requirements and non-blemish, the non-blemish standard, bevehemo. That applies to animal sacrifices. V'ein tamus v'zachrus ba'ofos. We've dashed underlined the expression v'ein tamus and ba'ofos because that's what we want to focus on right now. The necessity of having tamus, non-blemishment, when it comes to birds is not binding, so that you can have a baal mum when it comes to a bird. So if that be the case, we find sacrificial precedent for baal mum. Why not say that if you have a baal mum animal, the korban will nevertheless be acceptable through the offices of the tzitz? Omar le, so Rav Ashi, to whom this question was posed, answers, Olecha Omar Kra. The pasuk with regard to baal mum, it says lo yerotze ki loy lerotzon ye lochem. The pasuk says specifically by the baal mum that it is not acceptable. An animal sacrifice that is a baal mum simply is not acceptable. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's take note of what we have on the side by way of the topic heading and structural note. Nosei mivneh. The job of the upcoming Gemara will be liyashev, to resolve stira, a contradiction between shnei brisois, which we've labeled Roman numeral 1 and 2, so we can make easy reference to which brisa is assigned to which answer when we go on in the Gemara. But there will be a seeming contradiction between two brises, 1 and 2, b'inyan dam shenitmo b'mezid b'yochid. Im hurza oy loy. We're going to be talking about the problem of tumah with regard to a private korban, the dam that became tumah, if we're talking about a situation of mazid, whereby someone is aware of the problem and they go ahead anyway and offer the sacrifice, is the sacrifice acceptable or not? So those are the, that will be the point of contradiction between these two sources. Let's turn to the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. Dam shenitma v'zorkoi b'shoigeg hurtza. Dam that became tamei and was sprinkled, and this took place under shogeg circumstances. Rashi explains at the top of Amud Beis that shogeg refers to a case where a person didn't realize that korbonos can become tamei. So someone with that misconception goes ahead and offers his sacrifice, hurtza, it's accepted. However, bemezid lo hurtza, if with knowledge he went ahead and did it anyway, it's not accepted. Bamed v'murim, when do we say it's lo hurtza, it's not accepted? Biyachid, when you're dealing with a private korban. Avo b'tzibor, when you're dealing with a public korban, a public sacrifice, then we say bein b'shogeg, bein bemezid, hurtza. Whether there was no knowledge or awareness, and even if there was awareness, the korban is accepted. Uba'ovid kechovim, if you're talking about the sacrifice brought by a Gentile, an idol worshiper, according to the Torah, is entitled to bring sacrifices to the Beis HaMikdash. If, however, with regard to the Oved Kochavim sacrifice, a problem of tumah affects the blood of that animal, then we say, Bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid, bein b'ayunus, bein b'rotzon. Whether it be without knowledge or with knowledge, under all circumstances, lo hurtza, it will not be accepted. The pasuk in the case of the tzitz says, l'rotzon lohem, that Lohem, meaning for them, for the Jewish people, and with to the exclusion of idol worshippers. As you can see, we have a new marking, a triangle that appears. This introduces, as is explained by the Mivneh heading, the outside margin, you can see a triangle featured, with in parentheses the expression Ma'akav. This is an attempt to keep track of the give and take nature of the Gemara. So the triangle pointing up, with the point facing upwards, that's Kushyos. They represent questions, and with the point flipped over, facing downwards, Tshuvos. In addition to that, we will eventually see a series of diamonds numbered 1 through 4. The numbering you will see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, where the expression Lo Kashya is highlighted. Those are 4 Dalet Hatsaot, 4 suggestions, Liyashev Shnei HaBraisos, to resolve the 2 Braisos that we mentioned on Omen Aleph, will be in contradiction to one another. So as we now continue in the sugya, we see at the top line the raising of the contradiction. Viramini, we raise a problem, a contradiction. Now we call this Braisa number 2, Roman numeral number 2. Al Maha Tzitz Meratze, what does the Tzitz atone for, or cause to be acceptable? Al Hadam, V'al HaBosor, V'al HaChelev, Shenitmo. Bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid, bein b'oynes, bein b'rotzoin, bein b'yochid, bein b'tzibor. There's a lot of details in this little source. What we want to emphasize at this moment is the expression b'mezid. You see a reference to tumah that occurs under knowing circumstances, mezid circumstances, and we see also we've dashed underlined bein b'yochid. So we have a case of tumah, b'mezid, b'yochid, and the source says that tzitz is meratzeh. So we see from here that tzitz is meratzeh for mezid yochid. This is in contradiction to what was said in source Roman numeral number 1, where you can see with our dashed underlining, if you look back at the bottom of Chof Hei Omer Aleph, you can see we dashed underlined b'mezid lo hurtza b'yochid. So just focusing on the dashed underlining, you see immediately the contradiction. The triangle flips over, indicating a response. Omer Rav Yosef, lo kashya. There is no contradiction between the two sources. They simply represent two different schools of thought. Ha, Rav Yosef, source number 2 that is represents, we'll call it leniency, where even though there's tumah b'mezid and we're dealing with a private korban, it is acceptable. That's Rav Yosef's opinion. Ha, Rabbonan, the more stringent or strict source is according to the Rabbonan, Desanya. We will now quote a source. It's not a sacrificial source, but it does reflect Rav Yosef's leniency. The source deals with tithing, the separation of the truma tithe from agricultural produce. The truma is then given to a kohen. The source says that one should not separate fruit or produce that's tomei in order to create exemption for produce that happens to be tohar. So it says in the source, Ein tormin min hatomei al hatohar. The im toram, if he separated tomei produce to exempt the rest of his tohar produce from being forbidden. In other words, until something is tithed, the fruit is forbidden to be eaten. The produce is also, it's called tevel. Once the tithing takes place, so it can now be eaten. In this case, he's separating tumah produce. That is what he's going to give to the kohen and enjoy the rest that remains, the chulin that is tohar. So the source tells us that one should not separate and define as his truma tithe produce that is tome in order to cover that which is tohor. However, v'im toram, if one does do that, b'shogeg shumasoi truma, b'mezid ein shumasoi truma. If he does it lacking knowledge, b'shogeg, he's unaware of the problem, then it's considered legitimate truma. If he does it knowingly, then it's ein shumasoi truma. The Rabbanan imposed a knas, a fine, on someone that does this, even though on a Torah level it may be argued that one is able to do it. Nevertheless, the Rabbanan imposed a knas because he did this knowingly anyway. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, Bein Beshogeg, Bein Bemezid, Trumasoi Truma. We have dashed underlined the main point, and that Rabbi Yossi is lenient, and he says even if the Tumah produce was used in tithing, and he was aware of it being Tomei, the Truma tithe, nevertheless, is considered a legitimate tithing. So what do we see? We see that when it comes to Shitas Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi is lenient. Therefore, source number two above, which showed leniency in the case of Mezid, we can ascribe that source number two to Rabbi Yossi. Gemara has a question now. You'll notice the question lasts a few lines. We have a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf, a little triangle around it, and a vertical dashed line indicating that all of these lines form the question. The Gemara asks, Amar deshamis le the Rabbi Yossi delo kunis. It may be, as far as Shitas Rabbi Yossi is concerned, that we don't impose a fine on the person that did this kind of tithing. That may be true. However, demaratzit sitzal achilois mi shamis lei, but to ascribe source number two to Rabbi Yossi, which actually talks about other things, can we really say that it is that source number two is Rabbi Yossi? Before we go further, first let's define the expression meratzit sitzal achilos. In source number two, it mentioned that the tzitz covers or atones for situations of blood and meat that became tomei. If you have a korban and all of the meat became tomei, can you do zrikas hadam? So the source number two says above it works. The tzitz enables that to take place. Meat, as opposed to blood, blood is called oilin. It's something that's destined to the altar. The meat is something that is supposed to be eaten. Everyone agrees that the tzitz has power concerning that which is destined to be sacrificed or offered on the altar. The tzitz is meratze for tuma concerning oilin. But can it be said that the tzitz is meratze, covers tuma that affects something that is designed to be eaten? To make sure that we don't develop any misconception, when we speak about something designed to be eaten and the tzitz's effectiveness, we're not suggesting that at any point the meat that became tamei will actually be allowed to be consumed. But we are saying that if the tzitz is meratz anachilos, it means that the meat that became tamei is considered. As it's considered still there, and a sprinkling of blood will be effective because the sprinkling is being done for meat. It's important that the blood is being sprinkled for something. Of course, this too will be a point of Tanaic controversy later on, but for our immediate purposes, that's the concept behind tzitz meratz al achilos, that the tzitz will enable something that's designed to be eaten to be considered even though it's tummy, to be considered not a problem insofar as enabling the blood to be sprinkled. So that's what the issue of tzitz meratz al achilos means. The question here is, we know that Rabbi Yossi is lenient. We can see that from the Truma source with regard to the fact that he does not impose a fine on someone that tithed from using Tomei to exempt Tohor. However, does Rabbi Yossi go so far as to say that the tzitz will alleviate tuma problems concerning the meat, meat being the achilos, something that's designed to be eaten? The Gemara, let's read that again. We have a Tanaic source that features two Tanoim, including Reb Yossi. Reb Eliezer Omer, Hatzitz Meratz Al Achilos. Reb Yossi Omer, Ein Hatzitz Meratz Al Achilos. Here we have black on white, and we dashed underline Reb Yossi so to draw our immediate attention to his position. He says that tzitz does not alleviate tuma problems that affect something that is to be eaten. And yet, the source number two at the top suggested that the tzitz is meratzeh, amongst other things, al habosar. The Gemara answers. You can notice the triangle flips over. Epuch, flip around, switch around this last source, switch around the names, Rebbe Lezer, and say as follows, Rebbe Lezer Omer, Ein hatzitz meratzeh al achilos, Rebbe Yossi Omer, hatzitz meratzeh al achilos. Then we see that Rabbi Yossi is consistently lenient. Whether it be in the case of the truma, he says that that it's even if it's done bemazed, the truma is a good tithing. And the source at the top, which says that tzitz is meratzah not only for the dam but also for the botzar, that, meaning that tzitz is meratzah nachilus, that also will conform to Shitas Rabbi Yossi. At this point, then, we would have a resolution for the seeming contradiction between the two sources. Source number two above, which represents leniency, can be ascribed to Rabbi Yossi. Source number one, which was strict, will be associated with the Rabbonon. However, we have a question. Maskif lo Rav Sheshes. You'll note that this is a very long question. It takes in a Tanaic source. The thrust of the question is, can this last answer of switch around the shitas really be given? Let us explain the heart of the question before we dive into the myriad of details that will come upon us shortly. According to the most recent answer, we switched around the Tanaic opinions, and we said Rabbi Eliezer will hold Ein hatzitz meratzeh al achilos. By the end of this long question that we're about to learn, we will end up seeing that Rabbi Eliezer holds that tzitz is meratzeh al achilos. So that to rely on this epuch answer that we just gave will cause trouble for us later. If you skip down to the very end of this long question marking, you can see there's a line in the middle of which Rabbi Lezer's name is dashed underline, and we dashed underline as you see Rabbi Lezer, v'kotoni demeratzit tzitz alechilos. So we see right there that Rabbi Lezer is associated with the school of thought that says that tzitz is meratzit alechilos. So we'll say, ruins the approach taken by Rav Yosef in the first diamonded Lokashya. So we have to come on to a new resolution to resolve these two Tanaic sources, and that will take place by the time we get to Rav Chisda, where you see his name is underlined, and we see a diamond that appears there as well, with a number 2 in a diamond in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, which will represent a new approach to resolve the two sources. In the meantime, let's go through the long question, bearing in mind that we are going to encounter a great amount of detail, so this introduction that we just gave should hold us in good stead by the time we get to the end of the long question. Maskif lo Rav Sheshes, umi motzis afkis lo. Can you really do what we just tried to do, 3-4 lines up, where we said epuch? Can you switch them around and have Rebbe Lozer saying that ein hatzitz meratze al achilois ve'otanya? We have the following Tanaic source that eventually will indicate otherwise. Yochel bosor shenitma lifnei zrikas domim. Yuchayovin alein mishum tuma. There is a sin involved if one who in a state of tuma eats sacrificial meat. It's a very severe offense. It carries with it a penalty of kares. What's included in the sin of eating while one is tomei? So the Brisa opens up and asks, should we include sacrificial meat that became tomei before the sprinkling of the sacrificial blood? Let's go over this again. Could it be that meat that became tomei and was eaten before Zrikas Adam, would someone be tomei for eating that? And we're talking about someone who himself is tomei. Let's say he ate sacrificial meat that became tomei before, and he ate it before Zrikas Dam. Would he be chayev? Would he be guilty of the Isser of Tumah? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Kol tohor yochal basar. V'hanefesh eshetoichal basar mizevach hashlom emasher lashem v'tum osoy olov v'nichrisa. What are we to derive from this pasuk? The following. Hanitar l'tahorim, meat that had been allowed, that had a heter for tohor people to eat, chayovin olov mishum tuma. Meat that had received a heter, that, if eaten by someone that's tomei, will result in this offense. However, v'she'eino nitar l'tahorim, meat that was not mutar for a tohor person, and that is our case, that's what the situation was in this opening scenario, namely eating meat before Zrikas Dam. The sprinkling of the blood is that which enables it was the meat to be eaten. That's the matir of the basar. If it was eaten before Zrikas Dam, so it's not nitar. That's what this is saying, v'she'eino nitar l'tohorim, something that was not mutar for tohor people in the first place, ein chayovin olav mishum tuma. The Brisa continues with an alternative suggested approach. Oy eino ela, or maybe what we are to understand from the pasuk is as follows: ne'echal l'tahorin chayovin olav mishum tuma, v'she'eino ne'echal l'tahorin ein chayovin olav mishum tuma. Maybe the standard that establishes when there will be a tuma offense depends on something that tahorim can eat. If something is eino ne'echal tahorim, you can have something that, it though it had received a heter, it had been nitar l'tahorim, but some subsequent problem set in, making it eino ne'echal, they cannot eat it now. Maybe that will be the exemption. Namely, one who eats something that's eino ne'echal tahorim will not be guilty mishum tuma. Now, if we take this approach, otzi ani eshalon v'esayotze she'enon ne'echalim l'tahorim. If you have, let us say, meat that was left over, lon, it was left over beyond the time allotment, or yotze, it left the, let's say you have meat that's chatos korban meat, sin offering meat, that is supposed to be remain in the azorah. Let's say, after Zrikas Hadam was done, the meat left the azorah. That's yotze. Now, let us say someone that's tomei came along and ate that meat. That meat is eino ne'echal l'tahorim, because once it leaves its boundaries, it becomes forbidden to eat it. This is meat, though, that had once been mutter before it left. The Zrikas Adam was done. At the point the Zrikas Adam was done, the meat was still in place. It received a heter to be eaten by Torah, but a subsequent problem set in, making the yotze, making it eino ne'echal l'tahorim. So maybe, in fact, lon and yotze are part of the exemption from the exempted from the sin of tumah. Talmud loymar asher lashem riba. This includes. This expression tells me that the offense of eating while someone is tamei, who if he eats lon and yotz or yotze meat, he will be guilty. We're about to see something, a phrase in brackets. We're going to skip it initially because that which is inside the brackets is linguistically inaccurate. We'll go over it in a moment. So yochol shani marbe af hapigulin kenosoros. Should I include pigul? Pigul, and treat it the same way I treat nosoros. Nosoros, nosor, or lawn. This is something that's left over beyond the time. And we just said that meat that was left over beyond the time, if someone eats it in a state of tumas haguf, he is guilty. So the question right now is, should I include in guilt someone who eats meat that was pigul? Pigul is a case of a sacrifice that while it was being processed, it was processed with an incorrect mindset or thought. For example, while the slaughtering took place, they intended to eat the meat beyond its time limit. That's pigul. So let us say someone eats pigul meat. Should I include it in the prohibition of tumah like I do nosar? Talmud lomar mizevach hashlomim. The mizevach hashlomim, the mem, indicates some korbanos, not all korbanos. Therefore, mi'et. This excludes. So at this point, we'll include yotze and lon, and will exclude pigulim. Before we go any further, let's go over the bracketed section, starting from the three words before. Yochol shani marbe es hapigulin v'es hanosoros. Should I include in the tumah prohibition pigul and nosar? So the Gemara asks, nosoros hainu lon. Why are you asking about nosoros? Nosoros means something left over. Lon, we just mentioned before, lon is included. So why are you asking about something we already concluded? Ela, the more accurate reading is, should we include af hapigulin kinosoros? Just like we said, nosar is something that if one eats it betumas aguf, he will be guilty. In addition to the problem of eating nosar, he's also guilty of tumah. Should I say the same thing with regard to pigul? Talmud lomar mizevach hashlomim mi'et. The expression mizevach hashlomim limits. Uma rois l'rabois es elu l'hotzias elu. What is it that you see fit to include in the offense of tumah lon and yotze and exclude pigulin achar sheribo hakosuv mi'et? After all, the pasuk includes and excludes. So what is it that causes you to determine what is included in the tumah offense and what's excluded? Answer, Amris marbani es elu. I will include lon and yotze that are problems that arose after zrika. Shehoiso lehen shas hakosher. They had once been acceptable, had been once kosher. Namely, at the point of zrika, there was no problem with the meat. Just you left it over, or you took it out of the Azorah after the Zrika, that's a late problem. As a result of that, Tumah plays a role. And one who eats Lon or Yotzi, but Tumah Seguf, is guilty of Tumah. Umotzi ani es elu, I will exclude Pigul. Shelo hoiso lahen shasa kosher. That was never acceptable. In other words, at the very beginning of the korban processing, it was already processed with a forbidden thought that caused it to be also right there. It didn't have a shasa kosher. It didn't have a moment of acceptability. Ve'im tomar bosar shenitma lifnei Zrikas domim, the ochloi liachar zrikas domim. And if you'll ask, hey, once you tell me that something that's shalohoi solon shasa kosher is not included in the offense of tumah, then why is it that meat, korban meat, that became tomei before the sprinkling of the blood? If it became tomei before the sprinkling of the blood, so superficially it would appear it's shalohoi soloshasa kosher. And yet, the ochloi le'achar zrikas damim, if he went ahead and ate this meat that had become tomei before zrika, he ate it after zrikas adam, mitneima chayovin olav mishum tuma. So why is there a tuma violation? How do I know there's a tuma violation? Because only in the case of pigol did we see something excluded. This case of boser shenitmo lifnei zrikas dam and eaten after the zrikas dam is not excluded. So it must be that this, in fact, is chayov. Why? Answer: mipnei shatzitz miratze. Because the tzitz atones, or the tzitz causes, we'll call it a certain level of acceptability. Now, what is the tzitz working on here? What's it covering? It's covering meat, basar shenitma. And we want to emphasize that. This is the issue of oichlin that we saw at the beginning of this long question. The Gemara goes on to point out, nitma in, where it became tomei before zrika, the tzitz is meratzeh. However, yotze lo. If it was yotze before zrika, we said that it didn't have a shas hakosher. The tzitz would not meratze for it. Man shames le deomar ein zrika moeles liyotze. Which tana is known to hold that zrika is ineffective for yotze? Namely, meat that left the Azorah before Zrikas Adam, and then you go ahead and do the Zrikas Adam, it does not work. It doesn't enable the Korban to be acceptable. Who holds that? Rabbi Elazar. So we just finished a long Tanaic source from which we inferred that Yotze is not covered by the Tzitz. That shows us that this unnamed source is Rabbi Eliezer. The Katani, and in this now known Rabbi Eliezer source, it says, Demaratzet tzitz al achilos. It says that the tzitz does atone for the basar shenitma. Now, how do I know that the tzitz atones for the basar shenitma of Nezrikas Adam? Ironically, it's by virtue of the fact that if one eats it betumas haguf, he's chayav. We explained earlier that the chiyuv of tuma is only for eating something that had once been mutter. Well, this meat that became tomei before zrikas adam, where had it ever experienced a state of being mutter, so to speak? The answer to that is the tzitz covers tuma. The tzitz covers tuma even concerning the meat. Now, as we said at the introduction to this whole section of Gemara, we're not saying that the tzitz enables the meat to actually be eaten, but we are saying that the tzitz enables the meat to be considered acceptable with regard to the zrikas hadam. That's called tzitz meratze al achilois. So, if you put all of this information together, this source is reflects Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. And what do we come out saying? That Rabbi Eliezer holds that tzitz is miratze al achilos. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Opposite the line, just above that we just read, you see Rabbi Eliezer's name dashed underlined. If you skim up the page, you'll see another arrow. This arrow points to a line where Rabbi Eliezer's name appears. On that line, it said, Rabbi Eliezer Omer ein hatzitz meratz al achilos. That was a function of what we said, epuch. At this point in the Gemara, though, we can't say that, because we see here that Rebbe Elazar holds that the tzitz is meratze al achilos. Now, if you can't do the switch around, then if you work backwards with the markings, and we're now referring to the epoch that we saw in the upper quarter of the page at the end of a line, if we can't say the epoch answer, then that throws you back to the kasha that was raised before that. And we're looking now very close to the top of the page. There was a kuf that was encircled, the first question that had some length, the four-line question. At that point, the question was raised to ascribe source number two above to Rabbi Yossi, who is lenient, that we can't go any further than the Truma source. Namely, maybe by Truma he's lenient, but as far as the Tzitz Meratzan Achilos, who says that Rabbi Yossi goes that far? We had a source indicating Rabbi Yossi says that Tzitz is not Meratzan Achilos. And as far as things stand, that's the way it is. You can't switch around that source for convenience purposes to ensure the answer Rabbi Yossi gave at the upper part of the page. Well, where does that leave us? We got to find a new answer to resolve the two sources. Elo Omar Rav Chisda, Lo Kashya. You'll all of you marking enthusiasts out there will find great benefit or reassurance, if you will, from Rashi. Rashi on this piece of Gemara, you'll see three lines from the bottom. Notice Rashi says, Elom Rav Chisda lo kashya. Rav Chisda comes to answer. He says, lo kashya hanoch masnisa deliel. Rashi is pointing out that Rav Chisda's role is to resolve the two contradictory sources from way above. Well, with our markings, you can see that instantly, because we have assigned a diamond and labeled it number two, around the lo kashya that Rav Chisda is introducing. So we know that Rav Chisda is doing the same thing that Rav Yosef, he has the same role as Rav Yosef to resolve the contradiction that was raised at the top of the page. And as we said, Rashi's commentary bears out what we have accomplished with the markings. So Rav Chisda says as follows, lo kashya, ha Rabbi Eliezer, ha Rabbanan. Source number two, which showed leniency, that will conform to Shitas Rabbi Lezer. We just got finished showing how Rabbi Lezer teaches that Sitz is Meratze al Achilos. Ha Rabbanan, source number one that we saw on Omid Aleph, represents Shitas HaRabbanan. So there's no contradiction, it's simply a Tanaic controversy. The Gemara asks, and we're continuing with our triangles indicating a question. We see that Rebbe Elazar is lenient with regard to that aspect of things, that the tzitz is meratzan achilos. However, deloy konis mi shamis lei, that he is lenient with regard to imposing a fine when something is done bemazed. Do we know that he goes that far? You can say, for example, that tzitz is meratzan achilos if something became tomei b'shogeg with lacking knowledge, so that tzitz will say, okay, we'll overlook it, we'll allow it to be acceptable. However, to say that Rebbe Eliezer is mekil, is lenient with regard to situations of mazed where tumah was encountered with knowledge, bemazed it became tomei, does he go that far to say that that too is acceptable? The Gemara says, yes, I'm going to tell you Rebbe Elazar goes that far. And based on what? Ki hechi de shamis le Rabbi Yossi, shamis le Rebbe Elazar. Just like we saw Rabbi Yossi above, in the case of Truma, that Rabbi Yossi was eno kones, he did not impose a knas. We saw Rabbi Yossi says, we saw that Rabbi Yossi indicated that Bain Beshogeg, Bain Bemezit Truma. So Truma, say that we see the same thing with regard to Rabbi Eliezer. Desanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Bain Beshogeg, Bain Bemezit Truma. So Truma. The Gemara asks, Ema Deshamas Le the Rabbi Eliezer Betruma Dekila. It may be that Rabbi Eliezer is not, it doesn't impose a knas, a fine, with regard to Truma, which is a relatively speaking lighter area of halacha, with lighter relative to sacrifices. However, bekodshim dechamiri mishamisle, when it comes to issues of sacrifices and leniency with regard to things done b'mezid, does he go that far? Does Rabbi Eliezer himself represent a lenient opinion? The Gemara says yes, out of default in Cain, because otherwise ha aman tarme, source number two, upon whom will we be able to ascribe it? So out of default we see source number two, which talks about number one, the tzitzis maratz al achilos. We see that it's eno kones. Whom have we seen to be lenient in some of those areas? Rabbi Eliezer. And if we can't ascribe source number two to Rabbi Eliezer, we'll have no author for it. Therefore, this resolution of Rav Chisda stands. Ravina, Omar, Ravina has another approach altogether to these sources. Source number two, which spoke about even mazid being allowed, is talking about the initial tumah that became absorbed into the korban. There are two issues. There's the initial absorption of tumah, and then there's the sprinkling of the blood of a korban that's tumah. With regard to the initial tumah that's set upon the korban, Ravino says source number two that said bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid is referring to the initial tumah that's set upon it. Tumah osoi bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid hurtza. As far as how the initial tumah set upon it, even if it became tumah b'mezid, someone knowingly was mitama the korban, that won't prevent the korban from being acceptable. However, zrikaso, the sprinkling of the blood, knowing that the blood is tomei, that depends. If it's bishogeg, meaning that the sprinkling took place not realizing that it was tomei, or not realizing that tumah is a problem, hurtza. However, bemezid, if while sprinkling the blood, the kohen is aware that it's tumah and says, and he knows that tumah is a problem, and says, and goes ahead and sprinkles anyway, lo hurtza. And therefore, that's what was meant in source one where it said b'mezid lo hurtza. It's referring to the zrikas hadam done knowing that the korban is tumah. That will not be acceptable. Rav Shilo Omar zrikaso. He says just the opposite. When it comes to the Zrika Saddam, it doesn't matter if the Zrika is done knowing that the korban is Tomei. Zrikaso bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid hurtza. What does matter, according to Rav Shila's approach, tumaso, the initial absorption of tumah, the initial encounter with the tumah, that is limited. B'shogeg hurtza. If it became Tomei, not with lacking knowledge, namely, they didn't realize that tumah affects sacrifices, hurtza, such a korban could be acceptable. B'mezid lo hurtza. However, if someone knowingly was mitama the meat, or knowingly mitama the korban, that kind of korban, even if the Zrika Saddam took place later on, b'shogeg, it will not be acceptable. So source number one that says b'mezid lo hurtza is referring to the initial absorption of tumah according to Rav Shilo. At this point, the Gemara raises two questions on Rav Shilo's approach. And this we've indicated with a house marking. Ula Rabbi Shilo, ha dekotoni. We saw above, we have a little squiggled arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a parallel marking opposite the second line from the top, also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a squiggled arrow. This is a quote from above. It said, Shenitma, Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezid, and it said in that source, Hurtza, we've dashed, underlined, the tumah being absorbed, B'Mezid, knowingly, and yet it is acceptable. According to Rav Shilo, he said that tumah b'mezid is lo hurtza. How does he resolve his answer with regard to information contained in source 2, which would seem to contradict the way he presented his explanation of source number 1? Let's go over that point. Rav Shilo said that source number 1 that mentioned b'mezid lo hurtza was because it was talking about the initial absorption of tumah. However, in source number 2, it says when the initial absorption of tumah took place, even b'mezid, it is acceptable. Rav Shilo will answer, Hochi komar, thusly, you should read the source. The source on the second line from the top, nitma b'shogeg, if the initial tumah took place b'shogeg, then v'zorkoi bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid, then it doesn't matter what the state of awareness was when it comes to the zrika, provided the initial tumah was b'shogeg. At the top of Chov Vav Amar Aleph, Toshma, we raise a question: Dam shenitma v'zorkoi b'shogeg hurtza b'mezid lo hurtza. Here we've dashed, underlined the key expressions. We have zrika b'mezid lo hurtza. According to Rav Shilo, if you refer back to the bottom of Omid Beis, of Chafei Omid Beis, three lines from the bottom, we saw Rav Shilo say that zrika, even if it's b'mezid, it is hurtza. Here we see zarko, and it says b'mezid lo hurtza. Hachi ka'omar. Well, Rav Shilo will reread it as follows. Dam shenitmo v'zarkoi. Well, it depends. Aleph, and we've written this in courtesy of the Shita Mikubetzis, zarkoi bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid. The zrika can take place and will be effective even if it's done knowing that it is tomei. Nitmo, however, b'shogeg hurtza, b'mezid lo hurtza. With regard to the initial absorption of tumah, well, that depends. And this presentation is exactly the way Rav Shilo explained the matter. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.